Chapter 2.
Communications are jammed,
Semeca said, finger pressed to his ear. He looked at Corsaro, his features grim.
They've lured us in and wedged the door shut. We're trapped. Then we'll just have to pry it open, won't we?
Corsaro said, as Semeca's words sunk in. Before he could say anything further, the whine of anti-grav units pierced the air. A trio of gun drones shot over the parapet of the wall and sped through the air over the courtyard. But these weren't the annoyances they'd faced earlier. Instead, each of the new drones had a long, blocky, rifle-shaped weapon slung beneath its disc-shaped body. As Corsaro watched, one of the drones rotated and fired. A white scar went limp as the shot struck him in the head and punched through his helmet with apparent ease. The remaining white scars hunkered down behind their bikes and began to return fire, and the drones swooped upwards and vanished into the falling snow. Another trio swooped into position as the first vanished, coming from the opposite direction. Their long-barreled weapons fired, chewing the courtyard and throwing dust and steam from the melted snow into the air.
They're keeping us pinned down, Thirsk said. If we go out there, we're as good as dead.
Corsaro was pleased that there was no trace of fear in the Dark Hunter's voice. It was merely a statement of fact. He hadn't been eager to have the newcomer in his hunt, but there were other things to consider than his own preferences. Inter-chapter relations must be maintained. The Sons of Trigoris could not be allowed to forget the ways that had made them strong, ways that had carried them to the stars and beyond, no matter how diluted their blood. Perhaps he was a true son of Trigoris, after all.
A child could see that, Phobian,
Jebe snarled.
The question is, what do we do about it?
The storm bolters atop the rhinos opened fire, but their efforts to track the swiftly moving drones were in vain. Bolt shells struck the bastion and stitched a line up the walls, pursuing the second group of drones as they too vanished into the snowy darkness. Silence fell, but only for a moment. The two groups of drones returned, flight paths interweaving as they plummeted downwards like angry wasps.
We do what we always do. We act,
Corsaro said. He glanced at Semeca.
I recognize that type of Quothi. They have controllers. Keep their heads down.
Semeca barked an order into the vox, and in the courtyard, the Whirlwind and Razorback gave vent to furious bellows of indignation, shattering the night with contrails of fire. The weapons of both vehicles oscillated in a slow arc, firing at nothing in particular, but simply filling the air with death. The drones faltered, if only for a moment. But a moment was all that Corsaro required. He stepped out into the courtyard, bolt pistol leveled. Coolly, he fired, and one of the drones was knocked from the air. The remaining five focused their attentions on him, weapons rotating towards him.
Amber guy,
he said.
Make room, brothers,
the Stormseer said, stepping out into the open. Lightning crackled around him, curling the length of his staff and ionizing the air around him. Snow melted beneath his armored feet, becoming steam as he filled the air with snapping, writhing serpents of lightning. The drones shuddered as they were ensnared in the coils of electricity. Amber Guy's eyes began to glow, and, face tight with strain, he said,
I see them!
He pointed with his staff, and Semeca spat an order. The Whirlwind's missile rack rotated in the direction Amber Guy had indicated and disgorged its remaining payload at the rocky escarpment above. The darkness was washed away in a blaze of light as the Vengeance missiles hammered the ridge. Snow and rock tumbled down from the point of impact to strike the bastion, causing the structure to shudder around them. As one, the drones tumbled from the sky, striking the ground, smoke rising from them. Semeca kicked one aside as he stomped towards the Whirlwind, shouting,
Reload! Castellans! By the Khan! Or I'll have your topknots for my trophy rack!
He swung himself up onto one of the rhinos and swatted the space marine in the cupola on the top of his helmet.
Get back down there, Oji, or I swear by the Star Horse I'll kick your teeth in,
he snarled. Corsaro watched him, bemused, and then turned and dropped his fist on Amber Guy's shoulder plate.
Good trick, Stormseer, he said. I just wanted you to fry the drones.
Amberguy ran his fingers through his wispy beard and gave it a satisfied flick.
The Xenos were watching us through the eyes of those drones. I decided to return the favor.
He tapped the side of his head.
For one who can speak to the lightning, following the signal between device and controller was easy enough. Congratulate yourself later. Those were just the preliminaries,
Semaka said. Sitting in the cupola of Talwar of Shiban, he hammered on the top of the hull with the flat of his hand, and the rhino wedged itself hull first into the largest gap in the wall, effectively blocking it. There was enough room for him to swivel the storm bolter, and he let off a burst at something out past the wall.
Hostiles incoming! Multiple points, he said.
Past the rhino, Kosaru caught a glimpse of flickering, indistinct shapes. They were Suguma, he realized. The sneaky ones. What some Imperial reports called stealth suits. They raced past the gap in the outer wall, burst cannons whirring. They weren't trying to get in, he knew. They were merely keeping the White Scars' heads down. Delaying tactics, even the sniper drones. But why were they being delayed? Kosaru boosted himself up onto the rhino and crouched in the gap beside Semaka. His keen eyes picked out the flat hammer-headed shapes of several Tau troop transports gliding over the snow. They weren't in any hurry, by the looks of them. They might as well have been out for an evening ride. Then, it wasn't like their enemies were going anywhere, was it? He shook his head, disgusted with himself.
Of course, he thought sourly. You are a cunning one, witch.
Shadow Sun had used their speed against them. She'd laid a bait trail, and he'd fallen for it like an over-eager aspirant.
Snares within snares, he muttered. I've led us into a trap. Looks like they came ready to fight,
Semaka grunted, not looking at him.
Good. I intend to give them one. If you can manage to pry yourself out of that cupola, I'd like your counsel,
Kosaru said. Without waiting for a reply, he slid off the rhino and dropped lightly to the ground. Semaka followed him, grunting and cursing as he hauled himself out of the rhino's turret, likely with some assistance from the crew. Kosaru strode back towards the command center, rattling off orders as he went, and the White Scars moved to obey quickly. Most took up positions around the gaps in the walls, ready to repel an assault. Others picked up the bodies of their slain brothers and carried the corpses to one of the rhinos. Kosaru would leave none of their dead on this alien-defiled ridge if he could help it. Additionally, he wanted the enemy to have as little knowledge of their remaining numbers as possible. Information was as deadly as a bolt round in the right circumstances.
Hamburger, Jibby, and...
He trailed off, motioning to the dark hunter.
Cousin,
he said finally.
We have time, and we must make use of it. Come.
Inside the command center, he waited for them to file in and tapped the hologram. As he'd expected, the map of Agrellon was replaced by a three-dimensional cutaway image of Rhyme Crag. The bastion was illuminated, as were markers representing the forces now approaching it.
Oh, nice of them to leave us a picture so we could see just how badly we're caught,
Semaka grumbled.
They taunt us, Jebe said.
Kosaru had come to much the same conclusion, after wondering whether it was an oversight. What he knew of the Tau had never suggested a sense of humour, but then even orcs taunted their foes. Shadow Sun wanted him to know she'd caught him. He could almost admire that sort of bravado, if it weren't so infuriating, and, more importantly, aimed at him.
Wouldn't you, Thirsk said, we're the enemy. Would you have them fate us and throw a feast in our honour?
Jebe glared at the Dark Hunter and made to reply, but Kosaru gestured sharply, cutting him off.
Taunt or oversight, this is our situation. Suggestions, he said. A tortoise,
Semaka said promptly.
We seal this bastion and wait for the Khwarezmian to seek us out. Jammed frequencies be damned. He'll rip from the belly, and we'll smash their snouts on our shell.
Eagle!
Jebe countered. The champion stabbed the hologram with a finger.
We punch through their lines before they have a chance to cut us off. We swoop out of jamming range and contact Garchai. Then we ravage them as we move and take them apart before they can pin us down again. That is the White Scar's way. Leave shell games to the Sons of Dawn.
Corsaro's eyes narrowed as he studied the hologram. Silently, he meditated on the advantages and repercussions of both stratagems. He knew which he preferred, but preference was not always wisdom. His eyes flickered to meet Amberguy's. The Stormseer met his gaze placidly. If Semaka were a rock and Jebe a bird of prey, then Amberguy was a storm, implacable and impossible to predict. The Stormseer's mouth quirked in what might have been a smile, and Corsaro raised an eyebrow.
"What is it?" he said.
Amberguy reached into one of the many pouches that dangled from his equipment belt and retrieved a handful of something, which he scattered across the hologram dais. Finger bones, Corsaro realized, from an orc or some unlucky heretic. Amberguy was said to collect them himself, with one of the ceremonial knives sheathed at his waist after every battle. He made special effort to claim the fingers of witches and psykers, for they channeled the will of the spirits more easily. Each length of bone was covered in delicately carved Korchin characters, and each represented a symbol from the Chagorian zodiac. Amberguy raised his hand, and the finger bones rose like domino tiles, standing at attention. He made a circular gesture, and they rattled and fell, making a strange pattern.
"What do the spirits say?" Seneca asked.
"The spirits say, why does it have to be one way or the other? Why not both at once?" Amberguy said. "There is no one true path, my Khan. There are only potentialities. Stories yet untold and horizons yet unseen. Which story we tell and which horizon we seek is up to us. And we are free to do as we wish," he said, and looked at Jebe. "We strike the enemy from as many directions as possible. We give them more targets than they can handle and carve them up at our leisure. That is the White Scar's way."
Jebe glowered at the Stormseer but said nothing.
"What do the spirits say of Shadow Sun?"
asked Corsaro softly. Amberguy looked at him, his face unreadable. Then he twitched his fingers and the bones rattled.
"She is here, my Khan. Close. Watching. Waiting," he said.
He met Corsaro's gaze and added,
"But you already knew that. You are the master of the hunt for good reason, my Khan. Even the spirits defer to your tracking expertise. If you have brought us here, trap or no, here is where we should be."
Corsaro stroked his moustaches with the side of his thumb, thinking. Amberguy's words had heartened him, but the tactic the seer had recommended would divide his forces even more than they already were. But if the enemy were counting on them hunkering down, it might throw them into disarray. And if they were counting on the White Scars to make a breakout attempt, leaving behind a force to hold the bastion might force the enemy to split their own forces in ways that they hadn't planned for. He gazed at the hologram, trying to discern the nature of the ruse he faced. He was not by nature a strategist. There were other Khans for whom the subtleties of the great game were as meat and drink, men for whom war was nothing more than a game of go, writ large. They thought in terms of ploys and feints. For Corsaro, however, war was an art. Every battlefield a canvas, every drop of spilled blood a brushstroke. Watching a battle unfold was like watching an image appear. The trick was to see what the image was before it was completed, and to ensure that the picture you had was the one you wanted. He touched the hologram, considering. To hesitate either way was to be lost. The Emperor frowned on vacillators and the overcautious.
"Amberguy is correct," he said, decision made. "The enemy seek to deny us our advantage. to limit our mobility by pinning us here. Those out there are merely the hand on our throat, but the blade will be descending soon enough.
He looked around the room.
Wheel and spoke, my brothers. Semeka, you and Jebe will be the wheel. Ambergai, you and I shall be the spoke.
He looked at Semeka, who was already making as if to argue.
You will punch a hole through the tow lines with our armor and half the bikes. Take Hasik. He's our best rider, and he's outrun the tow more than once. Don't stop until you make contact with Garchai.
He looked at Ambergai.
And we will hold the tow's attention here. If that becomes untenable, we shall ride out after you.
We've got a load of castellans in the whirlwind ready to fire,
Semeka said begrudgingly.
That will buy us some time. But mark me, when they come, it'll be with those blasted two-legged tanks of theirs.
The others in the room growled or muttered at the mention of the enemy Abergma, the battlesuits. Such constructs were the bane of any battlefield, their destructive potential rivaled only by that of the Imperial Knights. Corsaro smiled.
I'm counting on it. This is the most powerful weapon in the universe.
Thirsk hefted his axe and spun it in a tight figure of eight as he followed Ambergai out of the command center.
Axes can topple empires. They kill kings, demons, and monsters. On Phobion, axes are passed down from father to daughter, mother to son. This is the axe my mother used, and her father before her. She gave it to me the day I was chosen to become a god of war. And though it has changed, as I have changed, it is still my axe.
He glanced at Ambergai.
Do you understand, Trigorian?
Yes,
Ambergai said. He smiled.
However, your axe is here, and the enemy is as yet over there.
He gestured at the outer wall.
Hence my question. Would you like a bolter, cousin? Bok will not mind.
He extended the bolter towards Thirsk again. He was holding two, both claimed from the white scars who'd fallen earlier. Thirsk took the weapon.
Sorry, he said. Which one was Bok?
He checked the clip.
The dead one,
Ambergai said. He looked away. Thirsk looked at him, and then back at the bolter in his hands. It was an ornate thing, lovingly edged in brass and silver, with a dragon's head embossed on the barrel. An iron ring, heavy with the teeth of orcs, had been attached to the grip, which was plated with bone, likely taken from the same orcs who'd provided the teeth.
On Phobion we left the bodies of the dead for the bats, he said.
We did the same on Chagoris, save we left them for the great eagles.
Ambergai sniffed.
Oh, we burned them.
Fire attracted the bats, Thirsk said.
I can see where that would be a difficulty,
Ambergai said.
Were they big, these bats?
Fairly, Thirsk said. They ate horses.
I'm given to understand there are large wolves on Fenris,
Ambergai said after a moment.
They eat men, or so these space wolves claim.
Thirsk made a rude sound.
Wolves, he said.
The sons of Rus are quite particular about their wolves,
Ambergai said. But he smiled as he said it. Thirsk chuckled.
By the by, that was enlightening back there, he said.
The Stormseer looked at him, and the Dark Hunter held up a hand.
No mockery intended, I assure you, he said. Among my brothers, command is not so fluid. One voice speaks, and all others listen.
Well, that has never been our way,
Ambergai said, somewhat chidingly, Thirsk thought.
Even the great Jagatai did not move without seeking counsel from his subcons. Men are not machines, cousin. They are not inclined to move in unison or to act as one. A wise Khan gives equal weight to every subordinate. He does not hesitate, but he considers, and then makes his decision accordingly, as every man must decide for himself to follow that decision. We must move as the spirit wills.
By which you mean they listen to you, Thirsk said.
Of course,
Ambergai said.
Wasn't that what I said? I speak for the spirits, after all.
He spread his arms and sucked in a lungful of the harsh, cold air.
This is the best time, cousin. This is the right place for us. The battle's red edge is our tent. Our battle brothers, our kinsmen, and the haze of war is our meat and drink.
Did your spirits whisper that to you?
Don't they whisper the same to you?
Amberguy said, tugging on his beard with a flick of his wrist.
Other chapters merely wage war, cousin. The White Scars are war. We are the crash, the noise, the thunder. We are the confusion and the madness and the inevitable end. We are the Star Hunt. Where we ride, worlds die.
One side, Phobion,
Jebe said, brushing past Thirsk before the latter could reply.
Some of us have aliens to kill.
The champion bounded out of the command center, a spring in his step and a feral, childlike grin on his face.
He looks cheerful, Thirsk said.
Of course he's cheerful. He's going to get to kill something,
Semeca grunted, joining Thirsk and Amberguy. Semeca looked at the Stormseer.
Guard him well, Stormseer, he said.
His face wrinkled up as if he were uncomfortable saying the words.
Always,
Amberguy said. He inclined his head. Semeca nodded tersely and stumped away. Thirsk watched Semeca follow Jebe towards the Razorback. Corsaro's second-in-command barked orders with rapidity, gesticulating about him for emphasis. Of the two squads of White Scars that had ridden in the Rhino, one was staying behind, while the other was splitting its strength between the two Rhinos, both of which would be providing the muscle for the breakout attempt. The squad who'd come in the Razorback was staying behind as well. The transports were all but useless in the Bastion, save as improvised barricades, and Corsaro had other plans for the defense of the place. While their commanders conferred, the White Scars had dragged rubble into position to create a series of zigzag strongpoints close to the command center. As he watched, one of the White Scars used a melter gun to sear several sections of stone together into a crude bulwark. Thirsk realized that they had no plan to block the hole in the wall, and immediately grasped the implication. The Tau had a number of troops with the capability of entering the Bastion by air if they so wished, making the wall all but useless for defensive purposes. But those troops that couldn't fly would be drawn to the gaping hole in the defenses as their easiest point of ingress. The makeshift strongpoints were arranged in such a way as to catch the inevitable assault in a killing field. It was a brutally efficient means of utilizing their surroundings, and Thirsk couldn't help but be impressed. His own battle brothers would have ignored the wall, but held the gap, leaving the courtyard empty so as to draw in the flyers for dispatch. But that was the White Scar's way, as he was coming to learn. They fought efficiently, utilizing the least amount of effort for the maximum gain. It was the predator's way, not the warrior's. Bait and switch, induce and gut. Bleed the enemy as much as possible before landing the killing blow. The Tau fought in a similar manner, and he wondered whether Corsaro or Amberguy had noticed. He refrained from mentioning it for fear of giving insult. The White Scars weren't as touchy as some of their successors, but they could be oddly defensive when their way of war was called into question. He moved out into the courtyard, taking it all in. The Rhinos were stripped of everything that wasn't necessary for the assault. In the field, the White Scars used their transports as mobile armories, loading them up with anything they might require, so that they only rarely had to stop and resupply. Frag and crack grenades, replacement storm bolters, and packs of ammunition were brought into the entryway of the command center, which had been converted into a temporary armory. The bikes were stowed behind the strongpoints for easy access. The courtyard was soon filled with the growl of engines as the transports readied themselves for departure. Once a decision was made, the White Scars acted on it quickly. The white-armored space marines moved briskly, and more than one sang softly to themselves as they worked. They spoke to each other, joked and laughed, and the sense of camaraderie amongst the star hunts was obvious. A hand settled on his shoulder. Thirsk turned, expecting to see Ambergai. Instead, Corsaro Khan stood behind him.
"If you would go, now is the time, cousin," he said.
Thirsk hesitated.
"Go. With Jebe and Semaka," Corsaro said. "If I were in your place, I would not wish to be trapped here. And you are not under my command. You are here to observe and learn. And if you would see us at our best, you must see us at the attack."
Thirsk looked at him.
"In the Delrond campaign, my battle brothers and I held the entrance to the cathedral of the Emperor Ossified for 5 years against the Greenskins," he said.
He slung the bolter Ambergai had given him over his shoulder.
"By the end, we were using their bones as clubs."
Corsaro said nothing. Thirsk took that as an invitation to continue.
"I am here to learn of your traditions and see how you wage war, to learn the ways of Chogoris and to show fealty to the Khan of Khans."
He hefted his axe.
"But this here, in this place, is how a Phobian wages war. Ambergai said that the White Scars are war itself. If that is true, so too are the Dark Hunters. And I would show you that a son of Phobian can stand at the Red Edge as well as a son of Chogoris."
He extended his axe.
"And if I must fall where I stand to show you that, it is a small price to pay."
Corsaro smiled. He laughed, grabbed Thirsk's helmeted head in both hands, and brought their heads together.
"Show me, brother, and then after perhaps I will teach you to ride, eh?"
He released Thirsk and stepped back.
"Come, brother. We have blood to shed. For the great Khan and the Emperor."
Corsaro turned away from the Dark Hunter and raised his hands. The noise level in the courtyard dimmed instantly. Outside the walls, he could hear the gathering storm. The Xenos were readying themselves for their first assault. It would be artillery first, he knew. That was their way. And he did not begrudge them it. He looked around.
"Go! And laugh while you kill,"
was all he said. The engines of the transports roared, and his men cheered. He unholstered his bolt pistol and trotted towards the wall. The Dark Hunter fell in beside him, and Ambergai as well. They, along with the remaining battle brothers, would cover Semaka's assault. A space marine stalked past him, hefting one of the extra-heavy bolters, loops of ammunition curling about him. The warrior caught his eye and patted the heavy weapon.
"Honor of first blood, my Khan,"
he asked. His tone was hopeful.
"By all means, sing them a song of death, Godi,"
Corsaro said, recognizing the White Scar.
"Make it loud and tuneful, eh?"
"I'll make it something cheerful as well, shall I, my Khan?"
Godi said. Corsaro laughed and gestured to the wall. The rhino that had been blocking it revved up and pulled back, dislodging loose bits. Godi stepped into the breach, and the heavy bolter roared. Without slowing his rate of fire, the White Scar stepped sideways out of the breach. Another White Scar, carrying the second of the two replacement heavy bolters, followed suit, stepping out into the open and then shuffling out of the path of the vehicles behind him. Spent shells dropped steaming to the snow from the feed boxes of the heavy bolters. Past them, Corsaro saw camouflaged vehicles rising over the snow, weapons glowing with pale energy. Tau fire warriors, clad in white armor, hurled themselves to the ground seeking cover. They'd been moving into position to make an assault, as he suspected. He wondered idly why they were called fire warriors. He dismissed the thought with a shake of his head. There would be time for such thoughts later, once the enemy was defeated. The vehicles visible behind the fire warriors were mostly transports, but there was one bunker buster, armed with the strongest energy weapons the aliens possessed. A hammerhead, he thought it was called.
"Even when they're being sneaky, they're predictable," Corsaro thought.
The Tau forces were as dogmatic in their way as the warriors of Ultramar. That was both their strength and their weakness. He slapped the hull of the Razorback.
Ride, brothers! Ride and ravage!
As if in reply, the Razorback's twin-linked heavy bolters roared, adding to the noise. Its driver gunned the engine and sent it rumbling forward, out through the breach. Behind it, the whirlwind fired a barrage of castellans, littering the ground to either side of the breach with explosive mines. The rhinos followed the whirlwind, breaking to either side of the latter as they cleared the gap in order to cover it while it reloaded. The rhinos' storm bolters added their voices to the Razorback's heavy bolters, and the air was filled with scything death. Tau warriors died, torn apart by the explosive bolts. One of their transport vehicles slewed awkwardly aside and smashed up against the escarpment, exploding in a ball of fire. The flickering shapes, which had sought to keep the white scars pinned down, revealed themselves as they fired at the transports. Corsaro gestured.
There! The Siaguma! He roared.
He'd been hoping they'd reveal themselves, if only long enough for the white scars to teach them the price for doing so. Godi pivoted at his Khan's command, and the heavy bolter in his hands roared in harmony with the storm bolter from one of the rhinos. The weird, bulky, insectile shapes of the armored Tau twitched and jerked as they were caught in the crossfire. Three of them fell, their armor sparking and hissing as it collapsed into mangled ruin. The others sped away, their forms blurring and vanishing in the still-falling snow that swirled thickly on the air. The four vehicles ploughed through the Tau lines, the Razorback's reinforced hulls smashing aside a Tau transport in a crash of metal. The Tau were not swift to react, seemingly stunned by the sudden assault. Corsaro hesitated, wondering if they should press the attack, but the moment passed. The air was split by the whistle of turbines. Heavy shapes dropped down through the snow, and the ground shook with the impact. The hulking shapes of the enemy battlesuits advanced slowly through the whirling snow. At the sight of them, the Tau fire warriors seemed to gather their courage, and they began to advance, their pulse rifles snapping.
"Back inside, brothers,"
Corsaro said quietly, trusting in the vox circuit to carry his words, despite the noise of the advancing Tau troops.
"It is time to bait the Xenos into a trap of our own."